You are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
This is Optimus Prime, and you are listening to All Things Transformers.
Hello, and welcome to All Things Transformers. I'm Steve Megatron, and joining me is TFG1 Mike.
Hello.
Hello. So today we are jumping inside the pages of Toy Robot Magazine as we chat with the excellent editor, wondrous writer, Eric Braley, and welcome to the show.
No, and. Yes, welcome to the show.
No, I wasn't reading that. I was saying, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. This is going to be awesome.
Yes, yes. So, we're going to pepper you with some questions.
I'm a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper, too?
Okay.
About Transformers and robots and the Toy Robot Magazine. So, starting off, did you grow up with Transformers or robots in general? And when do you remember first noticing them?
Okay, I was born in 1982, so I was lucky enough to live through the entire franchise from start to finish, pretty much. My first Transformer I ever had was in 1986, I believe. It was an Astrotrain as a Easter gift.
Oh, nice.
So cool. I just repurchased a 1985 Astrotrain, and I have him right here.
Nice. I've got four of them sitting on the shelf in the other room.
The same one?
No, they're all different colors.
Nice. No, mine are all G1s, and I do still have my original one, so I do have my very first Transformer I ever had.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, not too many of us are that lucky.
No, I had actually sold him years ago, and then the guy I sold him to sold it back to me.
Oh, that's even funnier, actually. I still have one original figure from when I was a kid, and it wasn't Transformers, it was Beast Wars.
Nice.
It's still Transformers.
It, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not G1, but yeah.
True.
I gave my brother Iguanus, and when I went to visit a year and a half ago, he gave it back to me.
Nice.
And I forgot I gave it to him, so he was like, if you're not going to sell it, here you go. And I was like, oh, awesome. And, you know, comes full circle. They're coming back out with it again. So what Transformers generation is your favorite and why?
It's twofold. G1, obviously, because that's what started it for me. That's what I grew up with. However, I'm also a monstrous fan of the Armada era. So there was a lot of figures in that run that I just really liked.
There were a lot of good designs in that run, too.
Yes, my favorite Transformer ever is Tidal Wave from Transformers Armada.
Understandable. He is kind of unique and interesting of a character.
Doesn't he just wash over you, though?
Nah. He's, I don't know. I just really like the toy. There's something special about it. I really love it. I even used to have one of the test shots for it back in the day.
Well, and he's one of Megatron's brutes.
Yeah.
So it makes him even more important. So what other robot franchises do you like, or do you kind of collect from?
You know, back in the day when I used to have what I called my original collection, anything robot period ended up in my collection. Didn't matter what it was. Then I sold it all, like, you know, many of us have done. I restarted collecting back in Combiner Wars, but right now there's certain Power Ranger robots. I like to get a lot of the earlier MMPR era stuff. Voltron is big, and then GoBots. And then just kind of your generic 1980s looking bots, those old more metal than plastic kind of toys. I like those.
Johnny Five is alive.
Or the robot from Lost in Space.
Yes, I've had many different versions of him over the years.
So I have to ask, because this is kind of an either you're for it, you're against it, or you're kind of Yeah, it's one of those questions that polarize people. So, do you like or loathe the Bayverse, or are you indifferent to it?
I am straight down the middle. I'm going to be honest. Like, I liked the first movie. There's parts I like in all the films. The Last Night might be one of the worst films I've ever watched, yet I watch it more than any of the other films. I loathe the films for what they are, but at the same time, I love them because they have brought so many more younger fans into the franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely see that. That's sound reasoning on it. It does kind of keep the whole thing alive in various forms.
Yeah.
So you've already answered the question of your first Transformer.
Okay.
So what Transformers cartoon is your favorite and that you kind of go back to and watch episodes when you just want something to kind of sit back and enjoy?
All right. This is where I'm going to get a lot of flack. Almost none of them. There are so few Transformer cartoons that have held my interest. Whether it's because I just thought they were too kiddish. Like, I'm not a big fan of the G1 cartoon. I hated all the silly jokes. I don't know. I watched a lot of the Transformers Armada, but then once it hit Energon Cybertron, I quit watching it. So I don't think I really have one.
Hmm. Unexpected, but an interesting answer.
Yeah. Not, like I said, I'm definitely in the minority on that one.
I can't fault it, though, because some of the shows are they do have an issue with rewatchability.
Yeah.
Especially it's got really bad writing.
I'm going to say, like, nothing against Machinima and stuff, but, like, that era, I could not stand their cheap animation style. That drove me nuts.
Well, you're in good company, so...
I just hated the time length. That was stupid.
It was the time length, but it was the animation and how, like, kind of choppy it was.
Yeah, that stuttery style, I'm still not a fan of. The only thing I've seen with that kind of style that worked was the Spider-Man cartoon movie. So.
Yep. Yeah, it worked for that. The Transformers, It needs something more concrete to kind of go with it.
Yep.
So, yeah, I totally get it. So, if you could voice any Transformers character, what would it be?
I had an obsession with the way Shockwave sounded in the cartoon and in the live action, or not live action, but in the cartoon movie, the 86 film. So, if I ever had a chance, Shockwave.
That would be cool. All right, now that we have the basics out of the way, how did you and Bill become friends, and how did your love of toy robots bring you together?
Okay, so... in the year 2000, I, like the Conan O'Brien bit there, I moved to a city or a town called DeSmit, South Dakota, really tiny town. And Bill was I think he was in 11th grade when I came in. I was in like 10th grade. And we ended up making friends through mutual friends. And we've hung out together on and off now since 2001. So we've known each other since high school. As for how Toy Robot came about, we have always worked together on small projects. Bill does a lot of film, so he's done small film projects on and off. I've helped him on a few. We've won some awards. I have had the concept of a Transformer fanzine since 2008-ish, that I wanted to do, and it never came about, and I pitched it to him. And he was kind of on the fence until I read him an article I'd written, and he's like, I like that. So we went to a mutual friend who does printing, and he has a magazine here in our town we live in, about the town. And he's like, yeah, I'll finance you guys. Let's get this off the ground. Let's do it. And that's how it came about.
Wow.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I have to say, reading the most recent issue, I believe it's... Volume 2, Issue 7,
yes.
With Optimus and Ravage on the cover. For the past 4.5-5 years, and every time my late wife and I would go into the grocery store, I would look at magazines or I would look at covers, and I would be like, okay, that kind of has oh my God, they want $16.95 for this? And I get it, and I understand it, whatever, fine. But like, Steve sent me the copy of issue 7, and I was like, oh my God, I kind of miss having, this is great, this is awesome, this is, why wasn't this around in 1986 when I was a kid?
And that's, you know, Bill and I and a couple other friends, if you came in during a study hall, we would have copies of Toy Fair, Wizard, Lee's Toy Review, and we'd be these nerds in the back just reading through every single article and memorizing these magazines, and we missed it. So my ability and passion to write and my knowledge on the toys and then Bill's ability to take amazing photos worked out hand in hand for this.
So what were each of your guys' kind of goals when putting the magazine together?
My goal was, from a writing perspective, to show that you can cover stuff that's been done before, because that's the biggest obstacle we had going against us, is everybody's like, all the information's on the internet, why do I want a magazine? And I said, because I can go to some of these wiki sites that are out there, and the information can be good, but it can be dated. It may not have been updated for, I mean, years. Sometimes it has maybe humor that doesn't quite work as well anymore, whether it be PC or it's just not good. I don't want to be hateful on whoever did those edits, but sometimes you're like, well, that's not funny. Why is that here? So I wanted to write very serious articles with a taste of humor. What Bill wanted to do was to show that you could still take these toys people have seen 1,000 times and just put a slight spin on it and make them really look great in a magazine. And I think we've really done well with that. And a lot of the magic also on the magazine goes to our layout editor, who is Elliot Lucas.
Awesome. So what is your favorite part of the magazine to look back at after you've finished working on it?
Number one, just knowing that this concept exists in reality and there's people all over the world that bought it. It's really fun to sit down and look at some of the rare items that we've covered. And I really enjoy doing the interviews.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. I mean, there's so many ways, like there are so many sections in your old magazine. And I was like, hey, I like Punch Counter Punch. That's an interesting way to do an opinion piece with each of the people. I was like, that's amazing. That works.
That was a concept from the earliest days back in 2008-ish. Somebody suggested that in our group way back, and I held on to that forever. I was like, man, if I ever get a magazine, I'm bringing that concept of Punch Counter Punch in, and it works really good because Bill and I don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, and I love it.
Very cool, very cool. Who is your end-all, be-all favorite, I'm going to say, Transformers character from any incarnation? Because, I mean, that's what we're here for, is all things Transformers.
Yes.
You can pick a Decepticon, an Autobot, a Maximal, and a Predacon.
Okay, so Decepticon is going to be Tidal Wave. Just hands down, I love him. Excellent character. Autobot, you know, I was always cheering for the bad guys, I'll be honest. But, you know, Optimus Prime, I like the concept of just this hero who will do whatever it takes to get things done. Predacon, get me, what was his name? Inferno, that little ant. That guy was hilarious. And then Predacon, Maximal. Let's go. Almost, I don't know, does it count if I say Leo Convoy from the Beast Wars?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah
totally. Leo Convoy, yeah. And you know what? And back to the cartoon thing, I would say Beast Wars, the cartoon. I did watch a lot of that. I remember that now.
Are there any Transformers characters you hate?
Armada Red Alert was one of the junkiest pieces of crap ever made. That new Jada Prime looks god-awful. but it's not for us. That's for the kiddos. You know what I mean? So I got to take that into context. There's definitely, I mean, if I sat down and really thought about it, I'm sure there's tons I would just be like, this is a terrible figure. I'm not a big fan of a lot of the earlier Studio Series figures. They like overcomplicated them and they just fall apart.
I can understand that though.
Yeah, like I have the three little motorcycle sisters and I tried transforming them. They all broke and I was like, nope, you just go in the box and I will never touch you again.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
I've been fortunate not to have too many of those issues. I do remember quite a few that would just fall apart on impact in the Beast Wars line.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. So back to the magazine, what's the average prep time to get each issue of the magazine ready for the, you know, for the people out there to enjoy the magazine?
Okay, so in volume one, we were just getting them done when we got a chance to get them done. Going into volume two, where we introduced subscriptions and digital editions, we wanted to have a very strict time limit. So we allow ourselves about a month and a half, 2 months to get magazine together. There's a short 2 week period of prepping it, getting it ready to go. And then we put it up for pre-order. Our magazine is made to order, which means we only make, say, about 25 to 50 more copies than were ordered. And that keeps our costs down. So I would say about every 2 months now, you can expect the issue to come in. A little bit more if the mail is slow.
Nice. So what are some of the difficulties, or what were some of the difficulties getting it off the ground?
Originally, we tried doing a Kickstarter because we thought it would be really nice just to get all the money up front. That didn't work out, unfortunately. So again, we are very lucky that the individual who decided to finance us happens to have like all of our editing is done in-house with his company, McQuillan Creative. His ad's on the back of all the magazines. And he was willing to have risk his money up front to help us go forward. And we thank him every day for that because, you know, now it exists. Repeat the question one more time. Sorry.
Just what were some of the difficulties getting it off the ground?
The other thing is scheduling. Scheduling is very tough. Bill is an incredibly busy guy. He's got a wonderful wife, two beautiful children. So summer right now, that eats up all of his time. On top of that, he does commercial editing because he has his own company where he makes commercials. He does editing for other people as well. If you've done editing, which I know you guys have, you know mm-hmm. what kind of process that can be. So, I mean, his day is sometimes 6 a.m. with a sick child until 3 a.m. with that same sick child and doing all this work in between. So wow. Trying to get our schedules to line up. Whereas I work from home, I sell stuff on eBay, so my schedule's a lot more fluid.
Wow. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yep. I respect everything he does. It's a busy, busy schedule.
And so one of the positives of it, what are your favorite sections of the magazine?
My favorite sections of the magazine are, a lot of times we do a section called Artifacts where we cover just a bizarre item that is licensed under the Transformers brand, whether it be a book. We've done, a European pencil case before, issue number 8, we're going to be talking about TV trays. So I like writing about those. I also really like hunting down bizarre and off the wall items that people may not know about. Like recently we were the first people ever to document a Korean version of Laserbeak that, I mean, as far as we're aware, we're the first people ever to document it, and it's wow. in one of our issues. So yeah.
And have you read any or been interested in any of the Transformers comics? And if you do, what was one of your favorite eras, more or less, because I know it's changed hands a couple times.
Yeah,
and different writers, and
I'm trying to remember who started off. Was it IDW or Dreamwave? It was
Marvel, then Dreamwave, then IDW, and then
Dreamwave. So Dreamwave. So when Dreamwave started with their run, I tried keeping up with that, but then it just so many books came out, I couldn't keep up with it. But I did enjoy that early stuff, especially their More Than Meets the Eye guides. Those were fun. Right now, I've just started rereading the Marvel stuff. And then a while back here, they came out with the Transformers manga completely reprinted, and I devoured that. That was one of the most fun things I've ever read.
Yeah, we're going to have to cover that at some point on this show and on the comic podcast I do as well, because I've heard nothing but good things about that.
Oh, yeah, it's its own continuity, and it's just, God, it's fun.
Have you read the IDW stuff at all?
A few bits here and there. I used to work as a comic show. I used to work at a comic shop as a manager. I've owned a comic shop, so every now and then I would thumb through them, but never really got heavy into them. It's nothing against the books. I just never had the time.
Right, right, right. Okay, so I wasn't sure if you had or not, because the next question, it's kind of like, I base it around what happened in IDW. If you could live on any planet or world within the Transformers universe, where would you want to live? And obviously, it goes without saying, yes, you can breathe on whichever place you choose.
Sure. If it's in any universe, it's got to be Planet Junkion. Those guys just seem like they know how to party and have a good time.
Wow.
They look like a bunch of crazy old biker hippies, and that's what I was raised by, and I'm down with that. Yeah.
Hey, but they talk TV, so if you
and
like
that's
memes,
even better
like,
yet.
Yeah, if you love talking memes or TV, then they're perfect.
Oh, man, you know they'd be down with meme culture now. So, yeah, it'd be great. It'd be a laugh every day.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. And you know they have Weird Al chained up in the basement just so he can sing all the time.
I'm okay
no, they turned
that.
Him into a junkie on.
Yeah.
That's true. They did that in animated.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was he, Wreck-Gar, right?
Yep.
Yep.
In animated, yep.
I am Wreck-Gar. I am garbage.
Yeah.
Good little or trash for all the good little boys and the little girls.
Yep.
I am Wreck-Gar. I dare to be stupid.
Yeah, I remember that line. Yep, yep.
Oh, it was so nice to have it. Like, I mentioned this. I don't know if people will hear it in the next episode or not, but the next episode, a guy I talked with about his origins in Transformers, we were talking about G1 Wreck-Gar and Eric Idle, and we got talking about the whole thing of who is that? Like Monty, I can't pick him out of the Monty Python. I just know his voice.
Yeah, no, he's one of those guys that if I see him on screen, I'm like, oh, that's Eric Idle. But if you tell me to point him out in a big group picture, yeah. I'm like, I don't remember. But yeah,
yeah, I don't.
But I mean, I grew up with a lot of Eric Idle stuff in the house. So as a kid, when the '86 movie came out, I was like, oh, Eric Idle's in this. You know, like a 4 or 5 year old child should not know that. So
I was like, wait, what's John Bender doing in this movie? I was like, wait a minute, shouldn't he be after Ally Sheedy or
right?
Or whatever. Yeah. So you have currently for volume 2, you have 7 issues that are out.
God, I try to remember even where we started volume 2, man. I don't even know my own magazine. That's so bad. No. Yeah. Overall, we have 7 issues out. Volume 2, I think, started with issue
6.
5 or 6.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have them in front of me.
Okay. Okay.
So, yep.
Okay, so the magazine has 7 issues in total.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a little preview of what's going to happen in issue 8, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just finished the notes on issue 8 this morning because it is going to go up for sale, if everything works, July 7th. Let's see here. I can actually bring it up on my window and give you guys some of the articles that I'll be showing up in it. So for an interview, we are going to be talking to the wonderful Scott Zillner of Planet X Toys, California. He's been on shows like The Toys That Made Us and Pawn Stars. He is a mega collector. He's one of those guys that you always hear about, like that has a little bit of everything. That's him. And he also works in the toy industry, so that's cool. We have an incredible write-up about the SR-71 spy plane and its entire history. We've covered the Piranacons, Super Zeo Megazord, and we've been introducing a new article called The Savage Ravage after our mascot, which is a black cat that Bill and I rescued in the middle of a snowstorm. And she has an article where she talks about the new Jada metal minifigures. So that's some of the things that we cover.
So it's funny you mention that because I don't know. I'm sure my microphone is going to pick this up. I actually have series one of the, I just bought it, of the Nano minifigs. Nice. So I'm curious to see what Jada does for series two, because in this series they have Optimus, Bumblebee, Hot Rod, Cliff Jumper, Starscream, Megatron, Jazz, Prowl, Sunstreaker, Sideswipe, Skywarp, Thundercracker, Wheeljack, RC, Ironhide, Ultra Magnus, Shockwave, and Soundwave. So I'm curious to see what Jada does with the next level of series two of those nano figs.
Yeah, there were some neat choices in there, so.
I just haven't gotten up the compunction to open it yet. Like, it's not that I want to keep it, like, mint in seal box or mint in box. I actually want to open it up and, you know, display the figures themselves. But I'm like, I don't know if I can get them back in the box.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yep, yep. It can be weird. We're also going to have a cassette mini breakdown. Sometimes we do little guides. And mm-hmm. So there we covered all the G1 cassettes.
Nice. That's cool.
So it's not a price guide. It's just a quick
That'll be nice.
Visual guide again. So
Yeah, it's kind of like how they used to do the, you know, Secrets of Teletran 1 and Secrets yes. of Teletran 2 kind of thing.
From the secret files of Teletran 2. In the days of Megatron, Decepticons developed the art of espionage using cassette technology. Their first cassette, Laserbeak, could fly undetected into any Autobot stronghold, record information, and then return to base. Then the Decepticons decided to increase their spying abilities with Ratbat. As a bat, Ratbat can hide in crevices that Laserbeak can't reach, and he's especially effective in tunnels, caves, or in the darkness of space. Ratbat reports on the Autobots' most carefully guarded secrets. The Autobots had no choice but to strike back at these Decepticon techniques of stealth, building a force of cassette transformers of their own, with Blaster as their guardian. They constructed Ramhorn the Rhino, who can use animalistic force if cornered, and Steeljaw, the lion, who can crawl through the foliage of any alien world to sneak up on Decepticons. They also bolstered their cassette force with Rewind and Eject, who can transform to robot mode and use more conventional fighting force techniques.
Yeah, that is awesome. Very cool, very cool.
I know I'm looking forward to... I saw there's another Beast Wars article coming, so...
Yep, this time around we're covering Optimus Primal, that big beast of a toy, so...
And, you know, there's always that old Rat Trap quote.
Jumping gyros! Optimus sure learns a new body fast!
Yeah, well, what do you expect? He changes him often enough.
Right? Yeah, we had a lot of fun trying to... get those photos done for that, because those knee joints on that figure, I hate them so much, but we got it done.
So was it the original Optimal Optimus that you were working with?
Yeah, the Transmetals one, yep.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Because I have the TransArt third-party one, and it's infinitely better, but the original toy was terrible on those knees, because when I originally got it, I didn't realize that the knees clicked down into the feet.
Mm-hmm.
And when I reacquired it, I discovered that it does do that, and then once
it loses
that capability, it doesn't stay up.
Yeah, no, we messed around with the joints a few times for the pictures, and after that I was like, nope, he gets stood upright and that's how he's gonna stay.
And I never know, because sometimes people like it and sometimes they don't, and that's fine. But I have just scrolled down on your Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want this at TRM. We need this. The Funko Jumbo Unicron.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm all about getting anything Unicron, so...
I'm all about paying like between $40 and $60 for this figure versus almost $600 for the one that I probably have no room for.
Yeah.
I think he's more than that now.
Oh, aftermarket on HasLab Unicron is asking prices are upwards of $2,000. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a minimum. It's
crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's minimum $1,000 to $1,200, which when we covered that in, I think, issue one or two, we called the aftermarket value on it almost to the penny.
Wow.
What's funny is he still costs less than the 2006 BotCon Beast Wars Megatron.
Yep.
I love Funko Pops, and I love it because I'm at my age now at 42, almost 4. Well, I won't be 43 until next February, but it's one of those things where I just want to have representation of the characters I love.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I have these nano figs. I just want to look at them and admire them for what they are. I don't need to, as much as I intentionally bought my little Astro Train here, I don't always need to, like, you know, fiddle with the figure and transform it and do this and do that to it anymore. I've sort of grown up, but not really.
See, I always tell people, like, some people have artwork, stuff like that. I said, that's what my toys are for me. They're 3D pieces of artwork that hang out in my office and make me smile.
And they can be touched, they can be transformed, but most of the time they won't.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah. Now, about the only time I transform them is for the magazine.
Yeah, because that's kind of how my collection sits. It's in a cabinet. It looks nice. I repaint them because Hasbro doesn't have the paint job, and or customize, you know, based on that. But overall, they stay in robot mode.
Yeah. Yep. Takes up a lot less room in robot mode. That's for sure.
Yes, they do. So, is there anything else you'd like to promote while we've got you on the line?
Yeah, absolutely. So, obviously, if you want to buy Toy Robot Magazine, when new issues come up for sale, we have a link on our website. We also have a link on our Facebook page. That's Toy Robot Magazine. We also offer subscriptions. So that is a reduced cost on the magazine that gets shipped out in a cardboard mailer. Some people want them in big fancy boxes. Unfortunately, we can't do that. We don't have the money to do that. If you are not comfortable with, say, buying it through us, you can go to your local comic book shop and ask if they can order it. We are sold in Diamond. So there's anybody with a Diamond account can order us worldwide and get it. If you want a subscription and you are overseas or out of country, we can make special deals to get those magazines to you. Just be aware, shipping, unfortunately, is incredibly high. We will be offering some fun stuff down the road. Like we have some posters that we printed out. All of our magazines include 7 posters. So we're going to be reoffering some of those soon. And we've been talking about maybe doing a silly fun issue or an annual of older issues in the near future as well. So if you want to see that, let us know. Lets us gauge if people will even want that or not.
Awesome.
Very cool. Very cool.
So we want to thank you again for taking this time to be on All Things Transformers and informing us about you and Toy Robot Magazine.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. So again, this has been awesome. I've enjoyed the trip down memory lane, opening these magazines, looking at them, checking them out, seeing the pictures.
That's what we like to hear.
Seeing things that I don't remember, like the Viewmasters or the, you know, mm-hmm. certain other things that were in previous issues.
Yes.
So as I've mentioned, I'm the old fogey here at 42 years old. Steve is 6 years younger, and he's like, I don't remember. I'm like, how do you not remember
I remember them. I don't remember the Transformers one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I had one. It just wasn't Transformers. It was like Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I had like a whole... You want to talk about... So before we started recording this lovely interview that we have here with Eric, he and I were talking about Battle Beasts and his obsession and wanting to have a complete collection of Battle Beasts. And yeah, I had a whole collection. Like I had... Anything that Hasbro or Milton Bradley or whoever was doing the Viewmasters 40 years ago, anything they put on a Viewmaster, I most likely had it.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were so cheap to get, so parents were mm-hmm. so happy to buy you 3 or 4 at a time.
They were dirt cheap.
Yep. And, I mean, I spent whole afternoons with all my Viewmaster reels laying out in the dirt and, like, on the farm and just, like, looking at them and stuff. It was a blast.
Absolutely.
All right, Mike, take us out.
All right, I will take us the heck out of here. Put them on my what, Megatron?
Put them on your tab, Michael.
I'll give you a tab. Ooh, you're gonna love it. Listening to us here in All Things Transformers, I have been your host along with
Steve Megatron,
and of course we've had Mr. Eric Braley. Would you like to give out your social media contacts for people to follow you guys on social media?
Yes, absolutely. So the main thing that we do right now is Facebook, because we're old and we don't understand TikTok. That is Toy Robot Magazine, or at Toy Robot Magazine. That's the easiest way to find it. All of our social links are on there. You know, give our magazine a look over. If you're not sure if you want to look at it or not, we also have digital. So that's a cheap way to hop on board. And I think you'll realize that once you get a magazine in hand, you know, having a physical copy of a book is a really cool thing. And also, if you want to up your collector game, we also offer metallic covers.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. I will have to talk to you about that later. Yeah, I don't do the TikToks. That's for the newfangled kids
Young whippersnappers.
Yeah, I've been spending 40 years trying to get widescreen televisions and widescreen monitors. Why do I want this portrait mode? Anyway, that's a whole... of course, you can interact with me. On Twitter, I am at TFJ and Mike. Find the show at All Things TFV3, along with at Geekcast Radio for the network. Steve, what is your Twitter?
At SCP21.
All right. You can also interact with us on our Facebook page, as well as the website, geekcastradio.com. Transform and transcend with us next time here on All Things Transformers.
Yes.
I wish to speak to my lawyer.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.